When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Boy, what a crazy, bizarre, just outrageous kind of a day. I got to tell you, I got lots of responses from people talking about what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on across the globe. I got to tell you, just some weird stuff in talking with folks. I'll tell you, it's there's just lots of chaos, lots of turmoil. You know, all the stuff going on in Israel and Palestine, more death, more destruction, more misery. And I condemn it all. I condemn it all. And here's the thing. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about something that I don't know enough about or I have any real absolute solutions for. But I do find it amazing. I do find it quite interesting that my Republican friends are all about, well, we're going to blame Joe Biden for everything. Let's blame everything on Biden. I find it interesting that the head of the RNC sees it as an opportunity. I find it interesting that Tim Scott is blaming Biden. I find it interesting that Trump says, would have never happened. Never happened if it were me on the watch. And again, it's this, you know, Everything's Biden's fault. Every bad thing that happened is Biden's fault. Every good thing that's happened, well, that's because of it's just the world that we live in. And I found it interesting Trump saying, well, you know, things all over the world, things are not what they were just 3 years ago. And you're right, Donald. Things aren't what they were 3 years ago. The world has opened up again. And again, going out, you know, telling the big lie again. You know, American tax dollars are funding these attacks. No, they're not. And this is how come the frame isn't, you know, Jared Kushner caused this? How come that's not the frame? Because if you remember, Kushner was supposed to have brought us world peace. Kushner was supposed to have fixed all of this. You know, maybe now would be a good time to have a confirmed ambassador. Kind of a thought. Now might not be a bad time to, instead of having an acting ambassador, have somebody who actually, is confirmed. I mean, the sad reality is we can't get simple functions of our government accomplished. Can't seem to get that done. And of course, Tommy Tuberville still holding. Our country hostage. But, you know, what do you expect from where we are in this moment? Now, Chris Christie says the House Republicans are being irresponsible. Yeah, of course they are. Because as we speak, they're still trying to figure out how to do basic functions of government. And they're saying, look, you know, we're going to send aid to Israel. How's that going to happen when the people who control the purse strings are dysfunctional? You know, It's one of these things where you look at the space that we're in and the amazing time that we're in. and the fact that we, again, can't seem to get the basic functions of government accomplished. That's what's frustrating to me. That's what's angering to me. That's what, at some point, I hope, I'm just throwing this out here. I hope we get something done. But I guess I don't have much faith in what the Republicans have put forth. I guess I don't. And look, I go back to where I started. I don't have an answer for what's going on in the Middle East. Nobody does. This has been going on my entire life and longer. But I fear the rhetoric that's being ramped up right now, the rhetoric that we're hearing right now, the scary stuff that's coming from the right, the authoritarians, the Netanyahus, the Trumps, the people who are ready to, you know, to make themselves dictators, kings, to install themselves permanently. These kind of things are their excuses to come down with a heavy hand. Their excuses to usurp democracy. Their excuses to consolidate power. And I was having a conversation with someone today, and I said, look, you know, the thing that really worries me, the thing that really kind of frightens me is, you know, we're one catastrophe away from an authoritarian taking over. All of the conditions seem to be moving us in that direction. And, you know, over the weekend, I was talking to my son about, you know, this TV show from when I was a kid, All in the Family. You know, Archie Bunker. You know, people my age know who Archie Bunker was. And he was a caricature of the point was, is he was supposed to be the racist, the homophobe. He was supposed to be the extreme. He was supposed to be the cautionary tale. And as I was explaining it to my son, because of course they have never seen, you know, what I grew up watching. So I was explaining, you know, who Archie Bunker was, and I saw, you know, because there are some clips now floating around on social media. And I said, look, you know, Archie Bunker is right now, he's a Trump supporter. He would be MAGA. And because none of this stuff changes. It just, you know, it just gets a different uniform, a different identity. And as I was explaining, you know, the Bunker era, you know, you can look at as either, you know, like I look at the book 1984. It's either a cautionary tale. It's something, there you go, whoa, I read this. This is all bad. We shouldn't do this. We should use this as the warning signs for what could happen. And then there's the other side of the coin that go, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. This is a playbook. This is what we should do. And, you know, I look at Archie Bunker now almost in the same vein as, you know, he was a caricature of what, you know, a racist, a homophobe, a bigot, all those things were. And it's something you didn't want to be. But now there are people who go, no, that's the guy. And I got to tell you, I'm a bit concerned of where we are. And as we were going through, you know, some of the things that the conversations that, you know, back in the 70s, you could have these kind of hard conversations, you know, through television. They did. Archie Bunker's, you know, All in the Family was, you know, groundbreaking. We're not that society anymore. We don't seem to have these spaces to have, you know, hard conversations anymore, to deal with hard problems anymore, or at least find some solutions to. It seems like we're in our camps. We've got our talking points. We've got our social media crowds. We've got our bubbles, and never shall we interact with others. And this is where I'm concerned about my kids and their future, because it seems like, and I can't help but think, you know, especially with the Trump rhetoric today, I can't help but think one one crisis, one terrible catastrophe, one tragedy, and someone like Trump, someone like Netanyahu, some authoritarian figure grabs hold of this country, or you know, countries around this world, because we're making that shift. And we now have fascism on the rise. We now have corporate-run right-wing strangleholds, where democracy be damned, rights of we the people be damned, rights of the minority be damned. Mob rule will be the rule of the day. And that should frighten everyone. Because at some point, everyone fits into a minority category somewhere. It's just not maybe today. So I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got lots to get to, questions, comments, especially about, you know, will we have a speaker? Will there be one by the end of today, tomorrow, next week, next month? Will they, could they, can they, might they? Who knows? Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, it's frustrating and angering where we are in this moment. But I want to hear your thoughts. Let's go to the phones. We've got Julie on line two in Minnesota. Julie, how are you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to pretend I've got some PhD in the Mideast either, but I just wanted to say one thing and then another couple of quick comments. You know, don't we all know that the murder and targeting of innocents, of civilians on either side, is morally wrong?
Yes.
And I think that you could also argue, yeah, but it has to be done anyway. That's kind of a different topic. But can we at least agree that it's wrong?
Yeah.
At least that's the way I feel. You know, I heard on the radio today that Rand Paul, I didn't know we didn't have an ambassador to Israel.
We have an
and I did
ambassador.
Hear that Rand Paul is holding it up.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing that I've heard is that, forgive me if I mispronounce his name, is it Tupperville?
Yeah.
I didn't know we didn't have a secretary of the Navy. I wasn't aware of it. And here is this huge battleship that you see on television, and we do not have a commander of the Navy. That kind of blows my mind. So, it's just kind of incomprehensible that we have a politician that doesn't want to appoint a commander of the Navy because he does not want women in the armed forces who have been raped to be able to have an abortion.
Well, I would argue he doesn't want women in the armed forces. Let's start there. And then go to the next part of it as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to express that and thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate it, Julie. Thanks so much. No, I mean, that's the sad reality. You got Tuberville. And look, these Republicans, they wrap themselves around the troops every chance they get. Every photo op they get, every time they have a chance to get their picture and to mug it up. But when it comes to actually doing the support and actually doing something to help, not so much at all. Let's go to Steve on line one in Chicago. Steve, how are we doing today?
Fine, thank you. And I wanted to make a couple of points. It is the irony here that given this outbreak of conflict in Israel, that it perhaps could push people like Tuberville and others to sort of move this along and actually secure that legislation in terms of promotions and whatnot, so that we could make sure that our military has been shorn up given this crisis situation. Because right now, he looks like he's the guy who's standing in the way of securing American military might and security. So, you know, perhaps there is a little bit of a silver lining there. Secondly, I do think your analysis with regard to All in the Family is an interesting one. I mean, Norman Lear originally created the Archie Bunker character to be this blue-collar guy who never got beyond high school. He's terribly unsophisticated. He's full of superstition and prejudice and hates just about everybody who isn't like him. The irony was that, you know, Lear thought that, okay, this could be easily the bad guy that everybody could look at and laugh. When they looked at the audiences, it turns out that half of the people actually hated Archie. The other half liked him and agreed with him.
Yep.
But everybody was watching. So Lear put on, you know, this great show. But he did miscalculate because he thought, everybody was going to disagree with Archie. No, it turns out half the country actually, you know, thought as Archie thought. And it does say something about just how far we've come and how far we have to go. You know, and you're absolutely right. It's this kind of thing because we have instability in India that's moving towards nationalism. You have this, all sorts of potential crises in China. You have what's going on in the Middle East. You have the Ukraine. And the Americas, we're not immune to this because, again, the migrant crisis is all a part of the instability that exists in Central and South America. So you're absolutely right. I mean, in prosperous times, Western democracies will exalt the notion of liberty and the freedoms that come with it and what all that means. But when times get tough and crises come along, it's amazing how quickly we're willing to, you know, sweep our freedoms under the rug for the all for the promise of some security and stability, and that's what authoritarian regimes promise you. You know, when you're afraid that you're going to lose something or you're threatened, somebody who comes along and says, "I'm willing to protect you, and I'm going to tell you exactly who the bad guys are and what we're going to do to them, and all I need is for you to sign away some of your rights and freedoms and." You know, I'll be there for you. It's amazing how many people will fall for that. And you know, think about how what has transpired in our lives. I mean, if you would have told people on 9/10, you know, the day before the 9/11 attacks, would you be willing to sit still for the following sorts of reforms in government? Most people would have said, "Are you out of your mind?" No, a Department of Homeland Security, and all of the things that come with a police state and a surveillance state, and everything. Of course not. 9/11 comes along, we're all signing up for that, except for a few sane people who said, wait, we might not want to go down that road quite as quickly. So, yeah, I don't think that we're beyond this stage, you know, the whole end of history thing, you know, that happened in the 90s, believing that after the Cold War was over, the world was just going to settle into this global economy in which we all realized that getting along with one another was the most important thing because it was the bottom line interest for everybody. What's good for them is good for us. We trade with each other. We don't shoot at each other. Now it turns out that people still function with that lizard side of their brain sometimes, and we're still tribal. We still hate the guy who doesn't look like us and doesn't share our religious beliefs and has a different history, and we're not willing to forgive and forget with regard to cycles of violence. And that's the people who study this, that's the thing that they all agree upon. They have differences on a lot of these issues, but they agree that where there's a cycle of violence, where you killed my brother, sister, mother, father, whatnot, then I'm going to kill yours. And then of course, if you've killed mine, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to feel the need to retaliate again. And that's exactly what we've been seeing during our whole lives, during our entire lives in that part of the world. And let's face it, there are people from outside of those societies that have a vested interest in keeping that conflict going, and they fund it, and they support it. And I don't know, like you said, I have no idea what the answer is, except to say that if you could somehow take 10% of the radicals out of the equation in both in the Palestinian community and in the Israeli community that are just that don't see anything but war and hatred, that would be the only solution. I firmly believe that there's a hope for 80% of the people there if they could just remove that 10% of the extremes on either side of that equation. But again, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No, the only thing I know is poor people are going to, a lot of poor people are going to die. That's all I know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's never the people who are in charge.
Nope.
I mean, Netanyahu and his family and others, they are not out there on the front lines. You know, he may support the occupied territories. He's not going to live in them. And the same thing with regard to the leaders of Hamas. Leader of Hamas lives in Qatar. His kids go to the best schools in the world. And they drive cars that most people could never afford, and let alone the people living in the occupied territory. So, yeah, I mean, there's a vested interest in keeping this going.
Yeah, I appreciate the thought, Steve. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Let's go to John on line three. John, how are we doing today?
Oh, doing just peachy. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Did you hear, well, what I read this morning on the electronic news, that the Japan News Service reported that there are no Israeli defense forces around the Hamas breach for several hours?
Yeah, I've heard a bunch of stories, like Egyptian intelligence told them this was coming. I think you hear all of this stuff all the time. To make it sound like, you know, someone wanted it. And maybe, I don't know. Would it surprise me if it was allowed to happen? No, wouldn't surprise me at all. Because this is,
Christopher Miller did that to us in this country on January 6th. He told our defense people to stand down in Washington, D.C. and let the Trumpsters go rampant. Okay? So, if it's done then, it can be done in 9/11, it can be done now in Israel or whatever. Intentional failure, just like Robert McNamara in Gulf of Tonkin and, you know, Vietnam.
Yeah, sadly, again, I don't know that to be the truth, but
yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You don't know. Nobody knows the truth, especially when they're fed full of untruth, half-truths.
I'm with you.
That's what this country is all about.
Appreciate it.
Star-spangled banner, God and King, and whatever. Nonsense.
Thanks for your thoughts, John. Appreciate it. No, look, yeah, I heard all the same stories, though, that, you know, Egyptian intelligence, you know, told them, you know, just like here on, you know, 9/11, you know, you had the, you know, August 6th PDBs, you had, you know, all kinds of intelligence, you know, saying, hey, it's coming. Was it allowed to happen? Well, we may never know. I can't say, and I'm not going to say one way or another definitively, yes or no, this happened, this didn't happen. You know, it's up to individuals, but there are no hard facts to say. But the reality is there is the August 6th presidential daily briefing that said bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. with planes. Seems pretty specific. But again, you know, all I do know is that rich people are going to make a lot of money. And I go back to Smedley Butler. You know, war is a racket. Rich people get richer. Poor people get dead. And the people who end up dead are usually the poor and the poor working class. The wealth class of this country and this globe and of history, they're not the ones who generally are the ones who do the bleeding, suffering, and dying. That's us. And the sooner that we come to the reality that it's us, and maybe we need to do something about it, maybe the better. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got lots to get to. Quick break, right back.
subtle results. Still you, but with fewer lines. Botox Cosmetic, onabotulinum toxin A, is a prescription medicine used to temporarily make moderate to severe frown lines, crow's feet, and forehead lines look better in adults.
Effects of Botox Cosmetic may spread hours to weeks after injection, causing serious symptoms. Alert your doctor right away as difficulty swallowing, speaking, breathing, eye problems, or muscle weakness may be a sign of a life-threatening condition. Patients with these conditions before injection are at highest risk. Don't receive Botox Cosmetic if you have a skin infection. Side effects may include allergic reactions, injection site pain, headache, eyebrow and eyelid drooping, and eyelid swelling. Allergic reactions can include rash, welts, asthma symptoms, and dizziness. Tell your doctor about medical history, muscle or nerve conditions including ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, myasthenia gravis, or Lambert-Eaton syndrome and medications, including botulinum toxins, as these may increase the risk of serious side effects. For full safety information, visit BotoxCosmetic.com or call 877-351-0300.
See for yourself at BotoxCosmetic.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember we had some of the Writers Guild folks on, and they got a temporary agreement. Well, they have now ratified that temporary agreement. 99% of the folks with the Writers Guild of America approved a new 3-year contract with the major studios. You may remember about 5 months ago they went on strike. Now this is behind them. And look, as I said, this is a big freaking deal, because this is the first victory in that new front line of the class war against AI, robotics, the brave new world. They were able to say, look, you know what? AI is not going to replace working people. This is a huge victory. Much like, you know, on Friday, there was the announcement out of the UAW that the battery plants are going to be in the master agreement at the UAW in the Big Three. Big freaking deal. Lots of good stuff going on. Now, as we talked about on Friday, the Mac workers reached an agreement. There was a tentative agreement, and I had asked, what do you think the chances of that agreement being accepted? And my guest said, don't know. Well, today we found out. And those workers are now on the picket line, as nearly 4,000 people in Macungie, Pennsylvania, members of the United Auto Workers at Mack Truck, have taken to the picket line. And here to talk about why they're on the picket line, I've asked Tim Herzog to come talk with us. He's a committee man, acting shop chair of UAW Local 677. Tim, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So on Friday, all excited. You know, people I was talking to, hey, they've got an agreement. This sounds good. What happened?
So there were some sticking points in our local agreement. They want to add a half hour to our work day. Right now, we work a straight 8-hour day. We get paid for lunch. They're looking to get more productivity off the line. So they want to run the actual lines 8 hours a day and pay us a half hour straight time to be there. They don't want us leaving the property, so they're going to pay us for our lunch. But, you know, that extra half hour, along with being straight time, it really throws a wrench into our employees' families' lives. You know, we got people trying to get kids to daycare, and a 6 o'clock start really isn't feasible for a lot of people. That was one of the main hangups. We had some other local language. They want to take away some bidding rights. They only want us to be able to bid once a year, changing jobs. And we have what we call Article 9, where we're able to change shifts. If your seniority allows you to bump shifts, they want to suspend that for 18 months. Just a lot of things that they want to do with our seniority.
Yeah.
And all the way around, the general consensus was that the pay was a little light. So we pretty much, I believe, all the plants voted it down to 73%.
Wow. So it must have been really unacceptable to get that kind of a rejection. Because, look, you know, all this stuff comes down to wages, hours, conditions. You know, I talk to people all across the country, and you look, we're at a time of high inflation. We're at a time when, you know, milk and eggs and butter, sugar and shoes, all that stuff costs a little bit more, and the wages have to keep up. And as long as wages, you know, are more than what the cost of inflation is, life stays okay, standard of living stays the same. But, you know, over the last couple of years, that hasn't been the reality. So it's time to play catch up, isn't it?
Absolutely. Hell is one of the other main things on our master. You know, COLA remains suspended again. I believe this would be at least our second straight agreement where it's been suspended. You know, when I started back in 98, our top rate was, I believe, $20.07. Right now, the top rate, 25 years later, it's $29.58. That just, it hasn't kept up. And,
you know, I hear this a lot. I know in my own experience, you know, I started in the LTL trucking industry back in the late 80s. And, you know, starting rate was $15 an hour, went up to 18 something, you know, back in the late 80s. And you fast forward, you know, 30 some years later, it's only a couple of bucks more. And inflation's gone up. The cost of everything's gone up. And the stagnant wages, the declining benefit, the disappearing pensions, you know, more wanting more work out of workers with less reward has been the constant. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what industry you are in. It seems to be the constant across the working class of this country. So do you get a sense, as I do, that finally people have had just enough? And that coming out of the pandemic and with all this inflation and all this stuff, and that people just have had it, especially as we're seeing strikes that are being successful and organizing campaigns that are being successful. Do you think that people have just had it?
100%. I know Local 677 has had it. It's tough. You know, I know that we've raised the price of our trucks several times since the pandemic. And our raises, they're just not keeping pace. When we didn't have COLA the last contract, it really hurt us. And to not have COLA protected raises, the proposed raises were 10% up front, 2% for each of the next 3 years, and 3% for the fifth year. Along with it being a 5-year deal, people were skeptical of that. And then the raises weren't COLA protected. And we got burned on a 4-year deal. So combine the not at least even being COLA protected and the 5-year deal, that was a really tough sell for our guys.
Explain what COLA is for folks who may not know, and then explain, you know, what having, you know, the previous COLA in the contract that came out of the pandemic, what that would have meant to your wages and to your members.
So COLA is your cost of living adjustment. I used to know the formula very well off the top of my head, consumer price index. But basically our wages stayed stagnant, and it would have kept us it would have kept our dollar buying power a lot better. We probably lost about $4.50, $5 an hour not having COLA. So I believe our last two raises in the contract we're finishing right now were 2% raises, 2-1% raises. It killed us.
Yeah, see, this is something I've talked about numerous times. You know, when my grandparents were in the heart of their working lives, and they go back to the 70s when we had that hyperinflation, when we went through that stagflation period, you know, the middle 70s, you know, you had really high inflation. My grandfather got, you know, 2-3 raises a year. I think 1975, he said he got 3 raises because of the formula and because, you know, inflation was high. And they made sure that, you know, the buying power, their standard of living, their wages didn't get eroded by inflation. That's what the unions fought for. And by taking that cost of living adjustment away, it has eroded the buying power of jobs that were the gold standard of the working class, like at Mack Truck, like at Ford or Chevy or GM or any of those places, or even in the LTL trucking industry that was unionized, you know, at 85% when I first started. You know, these were the gold standards of the working class. It's what built the most prosperous working class in history. And to have it eroded by inflation, to have it stagnant year after year without reasonable raises, they just turn them into McJobs, don't they?
Absolutely. We're having trouble keeping pace with the warehouses around here. Lehigh Valley is, like, you know, pretty much a warehouse hub, being on proximity to the I-78. Like, you can go to U-Line and get $28 an hour, you know, and I feel like the company's lost sight that building these trucks is a skilled trade job, you know. And it's, when I started in 98, we had about 8,000 people apply for 350 jobs. Now we have trouble filling, you know, a class of 25 on a Monday. it speaks volumes for where we're at as far as pay scale.
Yeah, well, it's not that gold standard anymore. And, you know, look, I've had that conversation with hiring folks in the job that I've worked at. You know, why don't people want these jobs anymore? Because you're not paying them as you did in the past. This isn't that better job, that union job, better life frame that it used to be in the past. And that's why I think you guys have taken to the picket line and said, look, we're going to restore the prestige of this job. We're going to restore the standard of living. We're going to restore our position in this economy. And I think that's important because we need this moment to reclaim some of to redistribute wealth back into the hands of the people who create it.
Yeah, you know, so they've been selling these trucks. Half our workforce is anywhere between 70 and 75% on the pay scale because we have a wage progression. You know, that's been going on for 10 years. This company's been charging 100% for that labor for 10 years. They're killing it, and it's time to start sharing the wealth.
Yeah. You know, I look at the big three. You know, their CEOs are making in the, you know, $20+ million a year range. You know, where's your guy at?
I honestly don't know. I should have researched that.
Do you think he's working for $20 an hour?
What's that?
Do you think he's working for $20 an hour?
Yeah, I doubt it. But yeah, it's just been tough, man. Like, our folks work hard. It's not easy to build a truck. You know, we don't build pillows there. You're either banged up, you're sore, you get home. You know, we want to be paid for it. We're not looking to be millionaires. We just want a fair wage. I'll be honest with you, our benefits are pretty good. Our deductibles took a little bit of a hit, but we've been paying the same price for our benefits for at least 4 years now. That was proposed to stay the same. But like I said, the deductibles went up. That was another sticking point for some of the people.
Well, as your cost of healthcare, as your cost of benefits go up, that means your wages are going down. As you're taking more out of your pocket to pay for what you had yesterday, your standard of living goes down. This isn't hard to figure out. This shouldn't be difficult for the company to understand that you're eventually going to want to have a reasonable standard of living. If you're going to be the folks out there, you know, sweating, bleeding, aching, destroying your body doing these jobs, because these aren't easy jobs, are they?
No, absolutely not. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a few good jobs, but senior guys have them. You know, that's just the way it goes. But
that's seniority. Overall,
it is tough work, man. You're building a truck. Nothing's light. Yeah, I just think it's gone unappreciative. Like, I don't know how else to say it.
So, you know, and again, this isn't the first time you guys have been on strike. I think, what, 2019 was the last time?
Yes, sir.
And out of that came...
Honestly, I wasn't happy with what we went back for. It was, if we would have had cost of living, it would have saved us. Nobody could foresee the pandemic, but not having cost of living, you got to have that protection. I understand why the big three are really stuck on it. We've been burned by it. You know, in 98, when I started, the company union agreed that we made a fair wage for our labor. And to keep us at that fair wage, you gave us cost of living. And every October, from October to October, we got a 3% lump sum check that was supposed to keep those in lieu of the compounding raise. But that COLA was supposed to keep us at that fair wage. We were two contracts into that, and they started taking 2 cents per quarter out of our cost of living to help offset health care. So over the duration that they have done that, they've taken back $2.76. While it says I pay $28 a week for my benefits, you know, you can add at least another $2.75 an hour to that. That a lot of the younger folks don't understand that where that came from. I've been there. I've seen it all go away. And honestly, it was a tough decision this time. I can see the finish line right in front of me. I got 5 years, got my 30 years in. These younger folks, man, they got the drive. I hope we can all stick together and win this together.
Yeah. No, and that's an interesting point you make. I mean, you see the end, light at the end of the tunnel. It'd be easy to go, oh, you know what? I don't care. Screw you guys. I'll get mine. I'm going. And the interesting thing is, you know, when we were on the picket line in Toledo at the Jeep plant and in Michigan at the Ford plant and the Mopar distribution center, know, the old timers were the ones who are like, look, I'm going to be okay. You know, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm out here fighting for the future so that the younger guys, the people behind me, have the opportunities that I had when this was a really good job. So everyone seems to have this idea that I met anyway, and I don't know how you guys in Mukunji are looking at this, but the future is just important as the right now. So I'm curious, is that kind of a frame that you guys are that you're seeing as well, or is this, hey, I just want what's right now?
Honestly, I've seen a lot of the older guys kicking in. This job's become to the point where, you know, it's not a legacy job anymore. When they were hiring, I did not want my son getting a job there. It's not the job that it was when I started. You know, these some of the guys I started with, man, it was a badge of honor. Some of the guys, their dad and their grandfather worked there. I was a first generation Mack worker, and I'm probably going to be a last generation Mack worker. You know, it's a shame that that's what it's come to.
Yeah. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Tim Herzog. Tim's a committee man and acting shop chair, UAW Local 677. You want to check out their website, UAW677.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Last question I've got for you. You know, obviously, nobody wants to go on strike. Obviously, nobody wants to miss a paycheck and go through what's going through here. What's it take to get you guys back?
What's it going to take to get us back? I'm going to guess somewhere around 10 to 15% up front. Coal is going to be a must, and we're going to have to work with that 8.5-hour day. Whether they pay it out at time and a half, I think that'll make it a little more palatable for people.
How can they do that? How can they only pay you at straight time if it's over 40 hours?
Because it's a 40-hour work day. They don't have to pay us for our lunch here in Pennsylvania. So they're basically paying us our lunch, so we can't leave the property. If we were working 42.5 hours, they'd have to pay us time and a half for those hours. But being it's just break time, and they technically don't have to pay us, that's why it's straight time.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a loophole.
I'll leave it to them to figure out how to take advantage of a loophole. I thought if they took your time, it all time, you know. I get not paying your lunch. I get that. But if they're paying you, we'll see how it goes. But, Tim, I wish you guys the best. One day longer, one day stronger. I hope you'll keep us up to date on what's going on, and hope folks will come back and talk to us again and keep us up to date. What's going on, man?
Absolutely, Rick, man. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. And I hope folks will find their way out to Mukunji if you're in the Allentown area. By all means, adopt a striker, as we've been saying for years. Anytime you see a picket line, park the car, jump out, put on those comfortable shoes that Obama didn't bother using, and walk around, talk, maybe bring a box of donuts, a cup of coffee, drop a couple bucks in the strike fund, and listen. Don't talk. Listen to what people are saying. Adopt a striker. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1997. That was the day that a group of female employees at the investment firm Smith Barney came to a tentative agreement to settle a sexual harassment lawsuit against the firm. Smith Barney was one of the oldest Wall Street firms, with a reputation for respectability. But behind closed doors, the firm more resembled what the Chicago Tribune described as a fraternity house atmosphere. The accounts women told of their treatment at the firm were lewd and disgusting. In the basement of the Garden City, New York office, there was a room called the Boom Boom Room, where female employees were told to entertain clients. Fed up with this treatment, more than 20 women joined together and filed a class action lawsuit. To settle the suit, the firm agreed to invest $15 million in diversity training, along with settlements to each of the harassed women. Sexual harassment of women in the financial industry was not only a problem at Smith Barney. Female brokers in Chicago filed a suit against Merrill Lynch, who agreed to a settlement with the plaintiffs. Smith Barney also did not learn their lesson. Just over a decade later, the firm again settled another sexual harassment suit to the tune of $33 million. This time, according to Forbes magazine, the suit was filed by four female brokers who accused Smith Barney of preventing them from competing fairly for new accounts, promotions and pay, and depriving women of equal training and sales support. Over the course of 15 years, Merrill Lynch paid out almost $500 million in discrimination suits to women and minority brokers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, good economic news. Not. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. Are you surprised? Are you shocked? But according to new Census Bureau data, the top 1%, their income grew by another 1.5%. They now account for roughly 26.5%. Of the wealth in the country, of the income held in the country. So you got one guy out of 100 taking 26.5% of the wealth, jamming that right in his pocket. The top 5%, the next top five, they saw their wealth grow another bit, from 23% up to 25%, and the bottom 40% of folks, fortunately, it's been rising, but nowhere near what it should be. It went from the collective net worth of the bottom fifth was 27%, was up 27% to $4.2 trillion from $3.3 trillion in 2019. Their share of the country's wealth actually shrank. So the wealth went up a little bit, made a little bit. Wealth, their percentage, down. So rich getting richer, obviously. Poor getting poor. The way it should be. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So I saw in WAPO that Kevin McCarthy said that he wouldn't mind being speaker again, I thought.
I'm sure he would.
I really think they have all, well, no, I know, they've all lost their minds, what little teeny ones that they had. But, you know, everything that's going on, and then they have these right-wing conservative writers for the Washington Post publishing articles that are just full of lies and propaganda. And I'm going, you know, really? You guys can't tell the truth about anything? I mean, it's just insane.
It's Monday, Alice. That's all I can tell you. Thanks for the thoughts. I appreciate it. Yeah, of course. It's what they do. This is the world that we're in. And as I've been saying for a while, you know, our Republican friends, they just lie a little different now. In the old days, as I said before, there was a kernel of reality. There was some truth in the story. It was just spun a little bit. You know, it's where you could go back and go, no, this was it. This is true. Now, you know, not so much. Now it's alternative reality. It's I believe, the I believe crowd. And that's what's so frustrating. Because, you know, you can't argue with I believe. I had someone tell me that they believed that all of the talk of income inequality was bunk. That if you really wanted to be a millionaire, you could be. And the facts just don't bear that out. What the facts bear out is maybe if you work really hard and you're very fortunate, you might rise one socioeconomic ladder rung. But for the most people, where you're born is about where you stay, and a lot of people will fall a rung. Because, you know, as we've been talking about, these jobs that used to be the legacy jobs. And, it's sad to hear Tim say, look, you know, I don't want my kids doing this job. And look, my grandfather told me the same thing. He said, look, if you become a truck driver, you'll be a failure. Because he saw what was coming. At the time, he was living through the effects of deregulation. He was living through Reaganomics. I graduated from high school in 1985. So the effects of Reagan's assault on workers was happening. He said, look, all of these trucking companies, they're going to start going out of business because they can't compete with the brave new world, which is, any idiot with a truck is now a trucking company. So all of the legacy rights that were in the old world where rates were set and competition was based on service and quality and all of that, that was out the window. Now it was dog eat dog, and he knew it. A guy with an eighth grade education knew this job was not going to be a great one. Now, it took a generation, and I don't want my kids doing it because, sadly, it is not the job that I started at. And it has gotten progressively worse over the years. And the same thing that, listening to Tim talk, generationally, the same listening to any of these folks who have had jobs that used to be what built the prosperous working class that our grandparents' generation built. They don't want their kids doing it because it's not the reward that the sacrifice of beating your body up, it's not the return for reward. It's just not. But it's good to see people are finally fighting back. It's finally good to see people standing up. And so I'm glad to see the UAW folks saying, enough is enough. Now's the time to say, stand up, fight back. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So of all the problems that they have in Arkansas, of all the insanity that's been going on, all of the assaults on child labor, all of the assaults on the education system, all of the billions of dollars that they've had in the way to Education Incorporated, all the kids are going to be put back into long-hour, dangerous work jobs. Nobody seems to care about that, but Podium Gate. And look, the argument over, is it a lectern or is it a podium? Inquiring minds want to know. And here to share some thoughts on, is it a lectern or is it a podium? And do we care? I've asked our good friend Pete Dominic to share some thoughts and help us work through and get to the other side of Podium Gate. Pete is a stand-up comic and host of Stand Up with Pete Dominic. You can find that at standupwithpetedominic.com. Pete, thanks for taking time for us.
Always made time for you, Rick. I'm so happy to see you and all of your beauty. Are you still doing the modeling thing just on the side as a side hustle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I belong on TV.
Me too. Mostly hands. Mostly I model my hands. I just heard about this story with Sarah Huckabee. It's a podium. Who uses the word lectern? But apparently her podium costs $19,000.
19 grand for a podium.
And I don't understand what that means. What can it do for you at that? I suppose it obviously goes up and down with the button. Maybe it's got some other electronics in it. But other than that, I mean, if the podium doesn't make sweet love to you or have $18,000 in it, then why is it $19,000? I can't. And furthermore, the idea that Republicans actually care about government spending has always been a canard. It's always been something that Republican politicians have tried to make conservative voters and folks believe. But it's not true. When they get in power, They spend all kinds of, they waste all kinds of money. Didn't you see the debate, the last GOP debate? Tim Scott and his old friend Nikki Haley, both from South Carolina, they're arguing about curtains. Did you pay for those curtains or not? I mean, they're, of course they did. They buy stuff just like any other person in office. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, of course, is the daughter of the former governor. Now she herself, the governor, she knows her way around the governor's mansion. She should know her way around making mistakes like this. $19,000 taxpayer expenditure for a podium that doesn't, from what I can tell, make love to you or have $18,000.
Or vibrate. I was thinking maybe it vibrated.
Yeah, well, I mean, even that wouldn't cause it to be that much money. And
if I was thinking like an AI vibrating screen kind of thing like that.
Well,
for $19,000 in Sarah Huckabee Sanders is not enough money.
No, it's by the way, I think the most important thing here is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is the governor of Arkansas. I think that's the most important thing. It's hard to believe that you could succeed after what she has done and seen and been. But, you know, I guess Arkansas, the standard is a bit different. More importantly, when you sit here and scream about how you don't want politicians in charge or you don't want people that are legacy politicians. First of all, Sarah Huckabee Sanders' dad is Mike Huckabee. Matt Gaetz's dad in Florida was a well-known state senator for years. I mean, talk about the swamp. It doesn't get any swampier than a politician's kid, Republican or yep. Democrat. I'm not saying they're all bad, but they usually are, and you certainly know how they got there. But lastly, you can't pass yourself off as somehow from being an outsider when you're the daughter of, the son of. It's just preposterous. Yeah.
But here's the thing. This is what gets me, and this is where I'm struggling. Because, look, I get, you know, $19,000 no-bid contractor. I get, you know, the $19,000 thing you stand behind while you give bad news. How come we're not upset about the bad news, though? I mean, if I'm living in Arkansas, I'm furious about the amount of money that they handed out to charter schools and voucher schemes. I'm furious about what they've done with the child labor laws. I'm furious about that stuff. But no, we're fed these trinket stories to get all worked up and all lathered up in the panties about.
Well, listen, I don't know about your panties, and I don't want to think any more about them. But mine, this is where I do a live read. Folks, Pete Dominic's panties. I mean, I think that you mentioned feed, and I think that's important. I think that we all have a kind of a curated feed of news, and some things you see and some things you don't see. I didn't see this story about Sarah Huckabee Sanders until you just mentioned it here. And I think that's certainly true in all areas of people's political biases. You know, you see certain things. We live on Earth 1 and Earth 2, and it's so easy to say, how do you care about this but not that? A lot of times people say, well, I didn't know that was happening, but I still don't care about it because it's not on my team. It wasn't in my feed. And I think we all need to do better, you know, work harder to kind of curate a less biased sources of information. I like to think that I do, but my consistency is outrage. If I don't like government spending, I don't like wasteful government spending. If I don't like it when one politician, you know, appoints their son or daughter to office, I don't like it when another one does either. It's too much tribalism for me. I hate partisanship. I like to be a principled person. So if I care about the environment and I'm anti-pollution, well, I'm not going to support politicians no matter what their names are, no matter what their politics are, if they don't support those things. It's not that hard to be consistent with your principles.
There you go. On point with Pete. There you go. Got to get your thoughts on it. It's been a week now. We've had a week off from Congress. Been kind of like a congressional, Ferris Bueller, you know, not much getting done, but not much was going to get done anyway. I guess as we speak, they're still trying to figure out who the next speaker is or who's not going to be. Any thoughts on the charade that's happening?
Well, I mean, I think the one direct effect is it's not good for the country.
No, of course not. The
obviously less important but still important thing, if you're a Democrat or a progressive, it's great for us. I think both in the short and long term. I don't know if you agree, but the more extreme the Republican Party gets, the better it is for anybody who's not a Republican. And I've watched this. I've covered Congress for over 10 years, and I'm old enough to remember when John Boehner was the Speaker of the House, and then Paul Ryan was the Speaker of the House, and the next Republican Speaker of the House, of course, is Kevin McCarthy. And each one of these speakers were more extreme than the last one, but the Republican Party as a whole has become a lot more extreme. frame as Donald Trump is their president and Steve Bannon one of their de facto leaders. And I think that's important to – I think the context is, Rick, really important to talk about because it's not a new thing, and it certainly didn't start when Trump took office. I mean, Trump was at the White House Correspondents' Center in the audience when John Boehner was Speaker of the House. So, I mean, I think that people need to remember that this party has been going further and more extreme since Reagan was president when it comes to the idea of governing and governance. When Reagan said that government is not the solution but the problem, that was probably one of the most effective, succinct messages any politician had ever delivered. And ever since then, and even before then, but certainly ever since then, Republicans and folks on the right have become increasingly hostile towards any level of government, local, state, or federal, but especially against the United States Congress. And yet, when they take power, I mean, because when they take power, they do everything they can to handicap and destroy government. And at this point, they're total nihilists of their own party. And I think the dog has caught the car. I mean, and that's as a result, of course, of the abortion issue. Yeah. I think that there are a lot of people, especially women, who are not at all interested in politics. They're intimidated by it. They don't care about it. They don't think it affects them. But they do now because this affects women directly. And it's not something that you can forget about. It's not even like a school shooting where it happens, and if it didn't directly affect you, we forget about it until the next day when there's another one. Women don't forget about their reproductive systems. They have a period every month that reminds them that, you know, Gilead is around the corner. The Handmaid's Tale is in the works. And I think that this issue is going to animate American voters at every age for a long time. And I think that they've done a lot of damage to their party and to their brand. Yeah. By restricting women's health care.
Since you brought up the abortion issue, I'm actually kind of surprised that there haven't been, you know, in state houses across the country, you know, any type of legislation to say, hey, look, yeah, we're going to make you have these kids, and you know, we want you to have these kids, and here's help. Right when Roe was overturned, I had predicted there would be some Republicans across the country who would say, we're now pro welfare programs. We're now pro social safety net because, you know, we're forcing all these people to have kids, and we want to ease the blow a little bit. We want to ease the, you know, the sense of, you know, of loss a little bit by going, hey, we're going to help you. Well, but there has been none of that. There's been nothing. I've seen zip on that front.
Did you say you're surprised by that?
A little bit, because, you know, or at least look, if I were advising them, I would go, look, you know, if you want to tap this anger down, at least make you go, look, I'm pro-life, but we're going to help on a certain level. They've gone completely the other direction and maintain their assault on those programs, which is going to make it even harder for people that they're forcing to have children to raise those children.
Well, I think that is – I'm completely unsurprised by it because Republicans despise more than any other group poor people, including their own poor people who vote for them. And the people who are disproportionately affected by restrictions on women's health care, including, of course, abortion, are lower income folks. And they certainly don't care about them. And if you're still not convinced about that, the most important statistic, I would say, in political initiative as a result of the legislation passed during the pandemic, that Congress was able to pass a child tax credit, which ended halved child poverty in America. It halved child poverty. It decreased child poverty by half. Yeah. And then it expired. They didn't renew it. And things got bad again for those families, for those kids. There are easy solutions to help folks that are living in poverty. And when we implement those solutions at the local, state, or federal level, they almost always work. This was working. It expired. It was not renewed. Those people are now living in poverty yet again. And so the idea that Republicans would ever do anything to help anybody living in poverty, including, you know, you can become impoverished when you have a child that you can't afford, including those families, is completely unsurprising. It's completely on brand as far as I can tell.
I get just from the political gamesmanship, I had thought that there would be someone, just anyone, going, look, this is how we're going to ease the blow so that politically we don't take the bloodbath that should come every election cycle for the rest of our lives. I guess I was just a little out of my nature and a bit optimistic.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are, every once in a while, there are people who are anti-abortion who say, listen, if we're going to be, they say they're pro-life, they call themselves, if I'm going to be pro-life, that means I should, you know, if I'm going to force somebody to have a baby, then we should help them. We should help them take care of that child. Every once in a while, you hear somebody be kind of consistent on that, but it's not the vast majority of people, I would argue.
Yeah, now that we've talked about this, it was really a stupid thought, because you know, Republicans hate working people. I say this all the time. I should know better.
Well, they hate working, but I was going to say that because it's your show. They hate working people. The only people they hate more than working people who are people that are working even harder, because there's nothing harder than being poor. You're more likely to be, quote, working many jobs, poorly paying jobs, if you're poor.
Yeah.
I mean, most poor people, much to the antithesis of the stereotype, are not lazy. They're not sitting around. I mean, a lot of them, by the way, a lot of poor people can't work because they have to take care of their kids. And you can't afford to put your kid in any kind of child care, and it makes no sense, and then go get a minimum wage job. So it's one of the traps of poverty around the world, and that's why people should be able to terminate their pregnancy if they, by the way, don't think they can afford the kid, much less don't want the kid.
No, I grew up in this. And, you know, maybe you'll agree with me on this, because the child poverty thing, the tax credit thing, was really infuriating to me, because I think it's cruel. I think it really is just plain cruel to show kids a different reality. I mean, I grew up, you know, we were in a high poverty area. You wouldn't know what to look at me now, but, you know, there were months where there was no food in the house at the end of the month. In fact, quite often. But, you know, didn't realize things were bad because we didn't know any better. You didn't, because everybody in the neighborhood, everybody we knew was in the same boat. So to show kids that there's a different reality, that things could be different, that there could be food at the end of the month, that you could have resources, that mom would not be stressed out all the time having to worry about paying the rent or paying the bills, and then yanking that away in the cruelest fashion possible right before Christmas. I think that just plain evil.
Well, poverty is a policy choice, and the attitude of a lot of conservative Republicans is that these people are lazy and they deserve to be poverty. And I was poor, and look at me, I'm doing well now. So can you. Everybody has the same opportunity. This is America. It's possibly the most simplistic view you can imagine anyone having, but they do have that. And also, I think you've done your listeners and yourself a discredit by poking fun at yourself. You're saying, well, believe it or me, you know, believe it or not, if you look at me now, you wouldn't believe it. I couldn't afford to eat that much when I was little. I think it's important to you know, that's, well, I see what you're doing there, but it's important to understand that when you're poor, you can't afford healthy food. And so a lot of times people say, people in my life, I've heard say this many times, I can't believe this person is a poor person and they're also overweight. Yeah. They it's their fault. It's their fault they're overweight. It's their fault they don't, they can't afford better food. No, the more impoverished you are, the harder it is to get healthy food. When it's harder to get healthier food, you have to rely on preservative-laden snacks, salt and sugar laden things. And that's why we have a diabetes epidemic in impoverished communities in America. It's because they don't have access to healthy, good food. It's not because they don't want to eat it.
No, you're right, Pete. No, there's no question about that. Thank you for the correction. Something I've said before, but thank you for
that. You have no excuse. You're doing well now. I mean, whatever your health issues are, those are all your problems. I'm completely sensitive to that, by the way. I think that it's so ridiculous when people look at people and decide based on the way they look, what opportunities they do or don't have, what education or resources they do or don't have. I find myself doing it from time to time, and I'm disgusted with myself. Luckily, I have, I have a perfect body. The symmetry in my body is almost perfect. And, you know, at 47, to just be as shredded and ripped as I am as a result of my great work, my testament to my health.
And your modesty is showing, and how humble you are. You know, it just comes through the airwaves, and everyone feels that for you.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but if you saw like a full picture of me shirtless, I don't think modesty would be anywhere near the.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We're leaving that right where it's at.
I'm just saying.
You're just saying. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with the perfect Adonis, Pete Dominic, stand-up comic, host of Stand Up with Pete. If you want to hear more of Stand Up with Pete Dominic, go to standupwithpetedominic.com. Find his podcast, fabulous, fabulous stuff, and Perfect Body. Perfect.
And if you want to know what I look like because you're just listening, imagine Skeletor. Like, same head, same body. He was ripped.
Okay, only with the, like Rambo with the Trump head on it. Is that what kind of
fine? Yeah, your yeah. Listeners who watch Master of the Universe know exactly who I'm talking
all
about.
Right. All right, but good for you. Good for you, Pete. Look, I give you credit. I'm hoping that someday I could be like Pete.
Well, you'll still have hair.
I don't know about that, but we'll see. Finally, I got to go back to the Congress thing. On a serious note, do we get a speaker?
Sure. Yeah, I think they'll probably realize what they're up against. I think the situation in Israel and Palestine right now is creating more of a sense of urgency that they can't really screw around with this. You've got to take care of this very soon. I mean, they shouldn't have needed the horror in the Middle East, but I think they look even less serious if they can't come up with somebody. I mean, Kevin McCarthy's already saying, if I were in charge, everything would have been handled.
It happened, right?
Right. I think they'll come up with somebody, but it's like, you know, I don't think it'll be one of the people that we're talking about or one of the people that put their names forward, including Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan. I'm kind of hoping it is. You know,
yeah, I want like, Jim Jordan.
Yeah, I want Jim Jordan.
I wanted Trump, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, that would be great. The more extreme they get,
fabulous. That'd be terrific.
Better. I mean, one of the names. Listen, I know that a lot of Republicans are thinking about Jim Jordan. A lot of people are thinking about Steve Scalise. But I'll tell you, I think they should nominate either me or Thanos from the Avengers. I mean, we want somebody who can come in there and snap their fingers and get rid of half of humanity. That's what we're looking to do. It's either Thanos or me. And folks, listen, you should talking about bodies. Did you hear him? He talked about his body. He's worse than me.
Yeah. He's 215, man. 6'3", 215.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's going to be someone that might be a little bit more moderate, a little bit more reasonable than your Jim Jordan or Steve Scalise or even Kevin McCarthy. That would be the surprise. I don't know who that consensus person would be. You would think they might want to choose someone who isn't a nihilist, who can get deals done to, say, keep the government open, because they're not actually going to pass legislation out of the House, then out of the Senate, and get it to the president's desk, because that's just very unlikely to happen in terms of any meaningful legislation. They might name a few post offices or keep the government open or pass a budget, but the idea that they're going to pass anything significant, I don't think anybody believes.
No, there's nothing coming out of it. But I look at Scalise and Jordan, and I'm going, why these two idiots? I mean, I look at Jordan, and I have no idea why Jordan would throw his name in the ring with all of his baggage with the Ohio State stuff. I hear there's some videos that just make him look really...
Exactly my thoughts. Why would you put yourself out there for more scrutiny when you've got these types of skeletons in your closet? It's not... That's exactly the thought I had.
And not even in the closet, to be honest.
Fair enough. Yeah, but, you know, I guess I don't know what the answer to that is. It's just power, I guess, just being in that position, being the speaker and the probably how enticing that seems to be for any of these egotistical congressmen. But I agree with you. Like, why would you do that if you're a Jim Jordan? Isn't there a documentary that George Clooney was producing?
Yeah, where's about that at? Clown?
Like, I don't know. I'm wondering, but aren't we all going to learn a whole lot more? I mean, if Jim and furthermore, you know, David Corn had a great piece about this in Mother Jones. He was one of the lead insurrectionists, yeah. Election deniers. I mean,
which
the
is
idea
why Trump endorsed him.
Right. The idea, while he works for Trump, you know, he'll take Trump's orders, which is why Trump endorsed him, too. But I mean, it's really crazy to imagine that this guy who played the role that he did in January 6th in the insurrection in election denial would be the Speaker of the House, that they would do that. That's tough to buy, but
no, it's crazy.
We've seen way crazier things. Yeah.
But help me with this, if you would. because, you know, I get Jim Jordan. I kind of do. He's an egomaniac. You know, Trump, I'm sure the Trump world people were pushing him. You know, who knows? I kind of, you know, he has no conscience, no soul. You know, I get that. What the hell does I'm David Duke without the baggage mean?
So Steve Scalise said, at some point said that, right? You're talking about Steve.
What does that mean?
Well,
is there something good about David Duke that I'm missing?
Well, for Republicans today, yeah, for sure. I mean, the hood is off. I mean, it's almost like David Duke.
The hood is off.
You know, David Duke didn't wear a hood either. He didn't. But the idea, Scalise didn't identify as a Klan member or white supremacist, but he hung around with them for a long time, and they're both from Louisiana. They know each other, and I mean, there's a lot to be unpacked. If Steve Scalise puts his name forward, you can find a lot of pictures of him standing in front of Confederate flags and worse, saying things and supporting certain people. And you know, when you're a Republican in Louisiana, you do have to curate the same people who subscribe to David Duke's newsletter for years.
All right, well, we will see. But Pete, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you for having me, buddy. Always great to be here. Keep up the great work, Rick. Thank you.
And it's always great to be in the presence of perfection. Thank you.
Yes. You're still talking about me?
Our good friend, Pete Dominic. Again, check out the website, standupwithpetedominic.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. And you can see the perfect physique, the perfect bill of health, the perfect specimen of physicality that is Pete Dominic. And yeah, he's pretty funny too. Quick break, right back to the ground.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like Matt Gaetz may get a reprieve after all. Last week I said I thought, you know, Matt Gaetz was going to get a good Cawthorning because you had the senator from Oklahoma. What was his name? Mark Wayne. Mark Wayne Mullen came out talking about how some of Gaetz's sexual exploits, grounding up ED medication and snorting it with Red Bull or whatever the allegation was. And I go, you know, here it comes. Yeah, you know, they're all of the stuff that Gaetz was doing, Republicans are going to start letting out. Evidently, that's now probably not going to happen. Thanks to, they're going to be going after RFK Jr. And my thought when I saw all of these stuff as the RNC begins mobilizing against RFK Jr., because they understand it's them that is going to get hurt by this. I started thinking about the Q kooks and how upset they must be for the fear that RFK Jr. could steal votes from JFK Jr. Could happen. The world we live in. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, hey, maybe JFK Jr. is coming back after all. Here to share some thoughts on the insanity, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick. I actually wish JFK Jr. really were alive and actually could run for president. He might do some things.
Yeah, but not
this
he's
election,
not. And,
some
and,
future election. He's not.
And, you know, the world that we're in is so screwy.
No kidding.
So screwy. And in fact, you know, right now we still don't have a Speaker of the House. They're still screwing around. And with the attack that just happened in Israel and all this, the chaos that's going on there, just highlighting how broken our government is right now.
I think that the centrists in the House, Republican side, will definitely, you know, in this Tuesday caucus they're having, they will definitely use this. The situation in Israel to say, you know, we've got to do this now. They're going to utilize that. In fact, had this not happened in Israel, I would say that the possibility of a non-decision would be, you know, lingering out there. Maybe they go home over the week. And I think this will cause at least for some of them to push for that. Yeah. Now, if they're really smart, Rick, there's two things they'll do if they're smart. And they'll do it before the caucus vote. One is agree to stop the nonsense of one member being able to vacate the seat of the Speaker. That's first. The second is, before they vote between Scalise and Jim Jordan, everybody raises their hand like you're in a classroom at school, and they pledge that no matter who wins in that caucus vote, it's 100% you go with the winner. Now, if they do that, that makes a difference. If they don't do that, you have a McCarthy situation where you go to the floor, and guess what might happen?
Chaos.
You know, the 15 rounds with McCarthy might look quick.
Yeah. And look, you know, I got to be honest with you. I was expecting a week of chaos. I didn't want to see the attack happen in Israel. Nobody does. Nobody wants that kind of tragedy. I was expecting a very long, drawn-out speaker fight. Sure. But I think you're right. I think if they're smart, urgency will rule the day. They will get this done, because from what's being reported, and you know this, you know, probably better than anyone, if we're going to send them money, if we're going to send Israel aid, it's got to come through the House, right?
Well, correct. And now here's the other thing that Gates has on the, you know, other side of him. Just think, if Gates had been successful and McCarthy had not been successful on this temporary reprieve of a shutdown. Just think if right now,
oh yeah,
not only for Americans, but for, you know, the war with Israel to the Palestinians. Just think if the government was shut down right now. Just think about it. You know, and because it would have obviously an impact on Americans, but a huge impact on what's going on over in the Mideast.
Wow. Now, here's the thing. As I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know what the answer is in this whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I have no idea how you solve that. It's been this way my entire life. Nobody seems, anybody who tells you they have an answer is full of it, I believe. I know a lot of poor and working class people are going to die as a part of this. But when Rona McDaniels, the head of the RNC, comes out and says, hey, this is an opportunity for us to beat up on Joe Biden. When Tim Scott comes out and said, it's all Joe Biden's fault. When Donald Trump comes out and says, hey, this would never happen if this was on my watch. I'm kind of struggling with where we are in this country, because this kind of stuff, you know, this kind of fighting, this kind of finger pointing. I don't know, in the old days, maybe I'm just being a little Pollyanna, but, you know, back in the old days, did this happen like this in the old days?
I don't believe to this extent, and I'll tell you how. Let's look at 9-1-1. 9-1-1 happened where, you know, when the U.S. Capitol had the anthrax. I chaired House Administration. Steny Hoyer was the ranking member. The minority leader was Pelosi. And the speaker was Hastert. Tell me, but find one article where we went at each other. Find one. Just one. They don't exist. There was a day when this didn't happen. Now, I must say the most unique approach was Pence, who blamed Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley. That was kind of unique, standout. And this is a time when they ought to stop all of this. Right now, focus on, you know, where we stand. We have a government that's close to a shutdown. You know, where do we stand with supporting the situation in the Mideast? Where it goes from there is going to be, you know, a real difficult problem after this dust settles, you know, on all of this trauma and tragedy. But you're right. I mean, there was a time, though, when it wasn't maybe this quick.
Yeah.
Maybe the jabbing came, like, later. You know, not this one. This was as soon as the rockets were hitting and as soon as the Israelis were being killed, this was being thrown out there immediately.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard. I said earlier, I go, how come nobody's asking why, you know, Jared Kushner isn't being called a failure? Because didn't Jared solve all this? Isn't all this, you know, you didn't hear any Democrats accusing, you know, see, this is Jared Kushner's fault. Donald Trump and Kushner claim they solved all this. How come we don't hear that?
And, you know, Saudi Arabia and Israel are about to do a deal. Hamas didn't want that deal. By the way, this whole thing, and Intel will show this whole thing has had a two 2.5-year planning process. Intel's going to show that. They're already hinting at it. A two-and-a-half-year planning process. So this wasn't based on one act, or it wasn't based on the Republican debate, you know, as Pence likes to point out, and it wasn't based on something that someone of either party said, you know, of either philosophy, or whether you're pro-Palestinian or pro-Israel. It wasn't something that somebody said. This has been in the makings. And Hamas wants dissension. Yeah. Wants dissension in Israel, wants dissension in America. It's that easy. It benefits them.
Because, you know, my first thought on it when I heard all these people saying, oh, it's Joe Biden's fault, it's, you know, it's America's fault, I'm going, wait a second, that's kind of arrogant. What do we got to do with any of this? I mean, this is kind of between them. This is, from what I understand, you know, the Gaza Strip is a hellhole prison of people who are, you know, I mean, the situation is just horrible all the way around. I don't know that we had. Am I wrong? Did we do this?
Well, we did not do this. This is the policy of how two different sides act with each other, and you know, I'm very careful on this to say that, because there are situations on both sides.
Yes,
the Gaza Strip remains 5 miles wide, 25 miles long, with 2.5 million people, with 71% unemployment, of which 52% of the young people under 30 are unemployed.
Right.
All right. So let's try to envision that, because D.C. is twice the size of the Gaza Strip. Let's try to envision 2.5 million people in D.C., 71% unemployed. All right. So
hold on. Let me frame this. It would look like D.C. would look like what conservatives believe it is.
Well, that's true. That's true. So you've got that situation. Now, no way does that mean that Hamas can do what they did. You also don't hear about the West Bank, because the West Bank didn't support Hamas. And they have ancient leadership in the Palestinian Authority. It's useless. And so in walks Hamas, telling people, the Palestinian Authority's done nothing for you. Look what we can do for you. We'll take you out of your unemployment. So a lot of people bought onto this, unfortunately. So they elected their own lunatics in the Gaza Strip. They elected them. Yeah. They elected their own lunatics. The West Bank, thank goodness, didn't do that. But it remains that after this is done, and, you know, the horrible things, because no matter what the situation was in the Gaza Strip, nothing can justify what on earth were done to the Israelis and these innocent people. However, when this is done and the dust settles and, you know, controls may be reestablished, there's a situation there that Israel and the Palestinians, in the end of the day, have to deal with. And, you know, we're not sitting there. We can't even broker this stuff. We've been trying to broker this stuff, you know, since, you know, whatever. 1948, we've been trying to broker something.
Yeah, more than my entire lifetime. I mean, this has been going on, and as I said, I don't spend much time on it, because I don't have an answer to it. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other on it, because I don't know all of the facts on both sides. But right. it's a horrible tragedy. But the fact that we've got right now a Republican Party that weirdly is you know all in on Israel while being, you know, on the side of, you know, the white supremacist anti-Semitic crowd is very bizarre. It's bizarre to me. If you're watching the Twitters, the same people who for the past several months have been pushing a lot of anti-Semitism here in the U.S. and across the globe, you know, all in on Israel. It's a weird kind of, I don't know how you hold those two positions in your head at once.
Yeah, they're juxtaposed. And then, you know, the Republican Party, as it's standing in the House, is comparable to a patient who's in intensive care, on life support, and the plug is halfway out of the socket for the ventilator. That's what position they're in. The next moves they make, Rick, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the moves that they make is going to decide whether they have any chance of control of the U.S. House next year. Any chance. It's going to be decided this week. And if they continue to do what they have done, which is to let, you know, one guy in particular, Gates, who wants to be governor or something of Florida, if they let one guy do this along with seven other people to do what they're doing to get their Hollywood moments, then they can just kiss goodbye control of the House. That's, I think, a fact.
No, I absolutely 100% agree with you. Especially when there's a real crisis in front of us. And you're right. Had there been a shutdown, wow, I didn't even think about that.
Think about it. Oh, Matt Gaetz, yeah, Mr. Shutdown would have been standing there. And I can tell you, everybody would have turned on him. You did this. You shut it down. What do you want to do now? Yeah, he's lucky that he wasn't successful.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I was expecting today to wake up and hear some more Cawthorning. And I use that because you look at what they did to Madison Cawthorn. I was expecting the same thing to happen to Gaetz. You know, they started with Mark Wayne Mullen and some of those. And then, with the stuff that happened over the weekend, it just stopped.
Well, I think some of the people were afraid to come out. There was the statement about what pictures he showed. There's other people that saw those pictures. I just think they're staying away from it because... Yeah. He's nuclear enough, and I don't think they want those members that he showed his braggings to. I don't think they want to be part of it. It's probably what's going on.
Yeah, good point. Any thoughts on who is going to be speaker? Any who's going to be dumb enough to put their name in outside of? Because I don't think it's going to be Scalise, Mr. I'm David Duke without the baggage, or GYM Jim Jordan.
Well, I hate to say this, I think it's going to be one of the two of them.
Really?
Yes, I think it's going to be. I don't think the third white knight's going to run in. Now, I should paraphrase this a little bit. If they do what I was just saying, that, whoever wins in the caucus vote, everybody goes with them, then it's going to be Scalise or Jordan. If neither Scalise or Jordan get the complete nod and they don't do that, then there might be, if they're deadlocked, there might be the white knight that rides in as the compromise. There might be, but if they do what I'm thinking they'll propose or should propose, which is Scalise or Jordan, which one wins, then it would be one of them. I'm thinking Scalise, but I'm reading where Jordan's got 43 commitments to his 22, but it's early.
Yeah, I'm pulling for Jim Jordan. If I got to pick one of them, I'm pulling for Jordan. Because
I know why you are. Because if you look at Jim Jordan and Scalise, I'm going to guess this is where you're going. If you look at Jim Jordan and Scalise, Scalise might just have the ability to kind of make this thing work. Jim Jordan will come in with grenades in each hand and the pins out.
Yep. that's right there.
I can read your mind.
Plus, George Clooney was evidently doing a documentary. This would be a good time to release that that documentary on what was going on at Ohio State.
Yeah. At Ohio State, yeah. That's out there, too. And when you become speaker, things become a little bit more laser-focused than they were.
Yep. And maybe we get rid of Jim Jordan. Who knows?
We'll
see. Bob, as always, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
I appreciate your expertise. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. For working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1888. That was the day that the United Hebrew Trades was founded in New York City. The new effort was patterned after the United German Trades. The goal of the organization was to organize Yiddish-speaking workers. Individual Jewish workers had been active in the burgeoning U.S. trade union movement since the 1850s. But the United Hebrew Trades marked the first time for such a broad-based collective effort to organize Jewish workers. Three of the early founders were Bernard Weinstein, Morris Hilquit, and Abe Kane. Weinstein was a young shirtmaker turned union activist. Morris Hilquit would become one of the leaders of the American Socialist Party in the United States. Hilquit was born in Latvia and moved with his family to the Lower East Side of New York. Like many Jewish workers, Hilquit found a job in the city's garment industry. He later graduated from law school. Abe Kane was born in Belarus. He was one of the leading voices in Jewish journalism in the United States. In 1877, he founded the newspaper, the Jewish Daily Forward, which still exists today. Under the leadership of these men, the United Hebrew Trades quickly became a presence in New York City. In March of 1890, 4,000 Jewish workers commemorated the Paris Commune with a march through the city. They more than doubled that number just 2 months later on May Day. By Labor Day, 15,000 Jewish workers marched together. These public demonstrations showed the power of Jewish workers. By 1910, the United Hebrew Trades had swelled to 106 unions. 150,000 men and women were members, including thousands of Italians and other nationalities. By the 1930s, the United Hebrew Trades had reached its peak of 250,000 members. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Texas Representative Will Hurd evidently suspended his Republican presidential bid and endorsed Nikki Haley, which was a complete shocker, considering nobody knew Will Hurd was running for president. And look, I didn't know. and look, that's my gig. But evidently, he made the endorsement. You know, gave some nice words, which is how we knew he was running for president. And good for him. Nikki Haley evidently has ramped up her fundraising, though. She's got about $11 million to fill her coffers with. She has basically outraised, most of the competition. Ron DeSantis of Florida raised $9.1 million. So, doing okay. They are now Trump's got raised $45 million in the quarter and has $36 million on hand. So, Haley's $11 million. It's not comparing. So there you go. Now here's some scary stuff. You want to know what's really frightening? With the rise of AI and our dependence on the inner tubes. I saw this story over at the Washington Post that Alexa, Amazon's Alexa, and there's going to be a moment where even the right wingers are going to go too far. But Alexa has come out and said that the election was stolen, was asked about the race in 2020. And Alexa, which a lot of people use, said that it was stolen by a massive amount of election fraud, cited Rumble and a video streaming there on Rumble as the information. So it's taking right-wing nonsense and it's citing it as fact. This is what I've been saying for a very long time, that what the right wing has done masterfully is they have flooded the internet with garbage, the Q, and they've created their own reality to where now the AI sphere is saying that, the election was stolen. Now, so what I did is I went over to I got one of the AI things, the Chat GPT thing, because I want to play with it. I want to see what it says, what it does. I asked, was the 2020 election stolen? And it said, no, there's no credible evidence to support the claim that the 2020 U.S. presidential election was stolen. Multiple courts, including the Supreme Court, dismayed numerous lawsuits filed by supporters of former President Donald Trump alleging widespread voter fraud and irregularities that could have affected the outcome of the election. And I said, wow, that's pretty impressive. It then went on to say that the Justice Department, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and the FBI described the 2020 election as the most secure in American history. Additionally, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency called the election the most secure in American history and stated that there is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. That is a pretty sizable statement. Claims of widespread fraud have been thoroughly investigated and debunked. But you listen to the kooky folk? No. It was all stolen. And, oh, that Russia thing? It was all a hoax. On Friday, I don't know if you saw the story of Jesse Benton. Jesse Benton, a long, long time aide to both Ron Paul and Rand Paul, was convicted, you may remember, back in November on charges that he and another Republican operative got about $100,000 from a Russian oligarch, an influencer, if you will. I guess just wanted a picture with Trump. You know, wanted to put it on social media, wanted to make something out of him. So what this Benton guy did, took the $100,000, kept most of it, donated $25,000 to the RNC, got two tickets to a fundraiser, put Trump right at the same table, same event with this guy, this Russian guy, got the picture, and there you go. Mission accomplished. Problem? It's illegal. Foreign nationals can't donate to campaigns. The quid pro quo that was, hey, you give me the money and I'll get you in, kind of not good. Now, this guy Benton, he is married to the granddaughter of Ron Paul. He was also convicted back in 2016 of a scheme in Iowa to help Ron Paul, do better in the Republican presidential caucus. Evidently, he paid a state senator to switch his endorsement from crazy Michelle Bachmann over to Ron Paul, and he got caught. Again, this is who these folks are. This is who these folks surround themselves with: a bunch of shady people. But it's all about the money, bunch of soulless folks. But I know the Russia stuff, all fake money. Fake news. The money was real. the money cashes very well. The stories about Russians paying, people like this guy, evidently those are all fake, except the ones that aren't. I wonder what Alexa would say about that. That's why we don't have one. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.